case is 97812, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Margaret A. Rice. Mr. Berlew.
Your Honor, this is a case, again, where there's pretty much a stipulation of fact between the parties and the profession as the violation of 17 hours, particularly the neglect of affairs that were entrusted to my client. This is a case where my client, in a practice that involved criminal and domestic relations work. In a whole series of cases, there was contact described as anything other than inactive between my client and her clients. Telephone calls were not returned the way they should. People were left in the lurch in many circumstances, and the practice did not reach up to standards required by this court. The real question that is before the court is going to be the penalty that is appropriate to my client in these circumstances. It has never been shown, I don't think, that there was anything intentional that my client did. What she really was involved in was a solo practitioner with recording devices, voicemail, inadequate means of attending to her client's need on a timely basis. We suggest, however, that this is the first time that she has been involved in any type of conduct such as this, that really, I think, what might be appropriate or a lawyer in circumstances like this, or this mentoring provision that the court has used, I think, very successfully in many cases where the court has been able to identify a particular behavior that might be improved with proper direction from a supervisor attorney.
But how do we say to the public, in particular somebody like Ms. Tribble, that you've got to go to small claims court to sue your lawyer to get a judgment for fees that have been paid, and in addition to that, the lawyer doesn't even come to court? I mean, that's what we're all about. That's our business. And if we let lawyers flout the system, then why shouldn't those who are not?
Well, I think I would say in this trouble in a case like this that all the lawyer has is a reputation, and if this court gave a period of a sit down and monitoring and description to the public in general as to what this lawyer did, that's a huge hurdle for that lawyer to overcome. And looking at recent cases with similar periods of suspension, which have been appropriate as deemed by the court, there's been criminal behavior, obnoxious behavior, repeated violations of several DRs, and there are several in this case, but I would suggest only this, that in terms of those types of behaviors, that is not present here. We have a lawyer from Georgetown undergrad, Ohio State, graduate law degree, that ought to be able to be successful. And the thing that's frustrating really is, in a case such as Ms. Rice, that we brought in the local public defender who talked about the enormous number of criminal cases Ms. Rice had, and in those cases where lawyers are most frequently attacked, there had not been a single problem. That what Ms. Rice, I think, needs to do is manage her business more appropriately and attend to the affairs of her client. I don't think that...
Do you think that'd be a good response from Ms. Tribble? Would it also help if Ms. Tribble got all her money back?
I think the hard thing is I don't think there would be a preserved satisfactory response to a person who's hurt by a lawyer. I mean, I, like this court, I know what's professional in high regard, and sometimes a lawyer fails, my client failed in this regard, in terms of the actual hurt to Ms. Tribble or any other client, just didn't have a phone call return or the matter handled the way she would like it. I think it's a hurt that all of us pay a price for, every lawyer, and certainly Ms. Rice. Now, I don't think...
Other than some nice words we might write on a paper that will appear in one of the books, what do we say to Ms. Tribble about her money?
Well, I think that to Ms. Tribble, there was real...
And I'm just picking her out because, frankly, the default judgment of the small claims court against the lawyer bothers me a lot.
Well, I think what happened there is the lawyer in all these cases, Ms. Rice and the related things, she had files that were very thick on each one. These are not case of a lawyer talking to a person that didn't know work. A lot of mediations, drafts, redrafts, settlement documents, et cetera, et cetera. And as every one, Ms. Rice did not set up a quantum merit claim.
No, let's assume she had a defense. Why didn't she go see the judge, like we require everybody else to do?
I think that she had the responsibility of going to appeals that she owes Ms. Tribble those money and did not, and did not look her in the eyes and say, no, you don't deserve your money back. I mean, I don't think the default judgment is any less significant or anything than it certainly is all the certainty of any other judgment. I cannot look at Ms. Tribble or any client and tell them that we can undo your hurt. Now that client was hurt, and I think that my client is going to be hurt rightfully by this court, who wants to instill confidence in lawyers, but I don't think that, number one, your good name is all you have, being held out in public saying that you failed. A sit-down of any type is something I think of Ms. Tribble as saying that lawyer was out of punch. To me, that I think that any lawyer is a significant punishment. And I do think in the end, we do have to look at the attorney, see if they're being spiritless and polite, if she represents the threat of the public, if she can be rehabilitated.
I guess, Mr. Berlew, let me suggest something, that it seems to me that there's a question of responsibility here. She apparently has been, at least the court, or the panel, the board's opinion indicate that she had been to see Dr. McDevitt. Just a chronic emotional problems which may have interfered with her ability to function productively as an attorney. What you're asking us is to essentially say, well, we'll let her continue to practice, but the bar is going to monitor her and mentor her. What about her? Does she accept responsibility for the fact that there's something wrong here? I mean, the pattern of what she's taking people's money and not doing work is a pretty not a good pattern for a lawyer to engage in. I guess, what's she doing? Anything about it?
I don't think there's any question that, and through all these matters, I think that she took responsibility and knowledge that she did. Her treatment with the psychologist predated these particular incidents. There were some problems, family problems that she had, some emotional issues for which she was treated. And then the bar then wanted an independent psychological evaluation, which is part of the record. In this case, I am not expert in those areas. I don't think that the doctors gave a definitive report of any type, and the counselor related will have a chance to address that also. But
I guess my question is, what good would monitoring do with a lawyer who is engaged, and this forces, as Justice Douglas says, forces clients to go to small claims court to get their fees back for which no work has been done or not enough work? How do we mentor a lawyer like that? It takes more than mentoring, doesn't it, or monitoring. It takes a lawyer admitting that I've done something wrong, and here's what I'm doing to make myself a better lawyer, or to not do this again. I guess I don't see that here. Maybe I'm missing it, but I don't see it.
I don't know how we would do that other than acknowledge the facts that occurred in this case. I think Ms. Rice did. She is not proud of, as never during that hearing, indicated that any of her conduct was appropriate. I don't think any of my arguments from the panel or this court that I suggested. I guess the troubling thing, and this is troubling in a lot of ways, is that you can have someone that's so well trained, and then in probably 50 or 60% of the practice have zero problems with what many would say is even the most difficult part of practice, with the criminal work. And then the domestic relations matter presenting such a problem. I wish I could answer your question thoroughly, but I can't. But I would only point to you the reputation I think that you have, that doesn't testify to what a person not mean spirited and generally cared for a client. A lot of these cases, too, if you look at my item, the ones that came to my client in the hope of there being mediation, which was a lot of document exchange, lots of periods of time going on before the matters were actually presented in court. That, too, I think probably requires more interaction from the lawyer with their client rather than less. But I think that in these cases, it certainly hurt his client. And that came out of the panel, and I think my client indicated that. kind of say, this is another one of those where I can sit and justify a number of things that happened. And I sit here and I can take it because it happened. It's not right. And I think we all acknowledge that. The question for me, again, looking at the perspective and the experience, the history, the reputation that the lawyers have in the community, it would seem to me that this ought to be one where mentoring would be appropriate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Berlew. Ms. Luckbill.
Good morning. My name is Ann Luckbill. I'm representing the Cincinnati Bar Association. With me at council table is Mr. Robert Guerin, who also investigated the grievances involving Margaret Rice. Following Mr. Berlew, after two sessions of this court, it's quite ominous for me, but I will try and address the issues, including those questions that Justice Moyer and Justice Douglas raised. With regard to Dr. McDevitt's medical report, it is in the record, and it does indicate that respondent has had mild but not clinical depression, that she has had problems acknowledging responsibilities to her client, and that this condition somehow manages to interfere with the client. He at one point viewed her as immature and simply not appropriate for the practice of law. As Mr. Berlew indicated, respondent's problems have arisen solely in the area of domestic relations. You have before you 9 complaints, 9 grievances. There's a pattern of neglect, a finding of neglect in every single one of those 9 grievances.
Do you find this to be, I guess we get an impression from the findings, but do you see this as a case of a lawyer sort of being overwhelmed with a caseload that is admittedly a very difficult caseload and sometimes moves quickly, where she simply doesn't have her office managed well, or is it more than that? Is it sort of a lack of, as you suggested, a lack of sense of responsibility for her clients, although we've got comments that indicate she really does feel for her clients? What happened to these? Are these exceptions, or?
No, Your Honor, we do not believe they are exceptions. We believe that the pattern that you see is indicative of her domestic relations practice. The 2 character witnesses are not witnesses that have anything to do with her domestic relations practice. They were a public defender, an attorney from the public defender's office, and a lay person who works with respondents in a mediation program. The clients do trust her, they like her, she's bright, she's articulate. But there it ends. The files stay, there are stipulations in the record to 13-15 unreturned phone calls, failure to respond to letters. At some point, I cannot give the ultimate explanation. What I can say is that monitoring will not work. People like Mrs. Tribble, as Justice Douglas mentioned, want results. They want their divorce filed. They want their child custody orders put on. They want results. They want this difficult part of their life ended. With respondents representing them, very emotional, psychologically devastating portion of their life gets extended and exacerbated. They place trust in her. She's betrayed that trust. Most of her clients are hardworking individuals. A few are professionals, most were not. They script and save to collect up the money to pay the non-refundable retainers we see recited in their contracts. And then when the work was not done, had to go back to family and friends to borrow the money or go to small claims court, as Mrs. Tribble did, as well as 2 other clients who went to small claims court to recover their fees. It's not a situation that the Bar Association wants to monitor, frankly. It's very difficult. Unlike cases where this court has ordered monitoring, often where there's an alcoholic involved, there's no test that we can administer to respond. We have no way of knowing.
So you say this is an aberration that only applies in her domestic relations work, as she has other areas of practice, criminal law, what other areas?
Criminal law and a mediation practice through a nonprofit agency, BJers.
And the same behavior is not apparent in those areas.
We have found no evidence of that. The monitoring, if you will not work. not only is there no test by which we can determine that respondent is safe for the public and that it's in the public interest to allow her to practice, it hasn't worked for the time being. There's already been two hearings in this case. There have been multiple grievances that occurred over a period of time, not in a clump all at one time, no life crisis event that seemed to trigger the grievances. An extended period of time over 3 years. At the September 1996 hearing, 9 of the grievances were before the panel. At that time, the respondent indicated that her problems were resolved primarily with regard to her inability to effectively communicate with clients, because she now had a paralegal intern and had a cell phone and could return phone calls from the courthouse. What we later found out is that at that time, there were 2 more of her clients who were not having the calls returned, not having their matters attended to, Mr. Taylor and Ms. Molloy. We went forward, therefore, with another hearing and continuation in March of 1997 on those 1996 grievances. In other words, she had wake-up call, warnings, new grievances filed. Behavior patterns did not change. This is a case where clearly the public interest requires that this court inform the public that the respondent no longer is entitled to bear a certificate entitled her to practice law. These clients in the grievance placed a great deal of faith in the respondent, a great deal of trust. In some cases, their only extra funds were placed in her hands. In return, she neglected their cases, violated various disciplinary rules involving trust fund accounts, return of client files, and finally violated CR2-102A4 involving fraud, deceit, and dishonesty. The panel opinion that was adopted by the Board of Grievance Commissioners explains how she fabricated or backdated a document to the final grievance of Mr. Taylor in order to make it look as if she had responded timely and forwarded on to him a mortgage or note. The uncontradicted evidence is that she did not do that, and in some fashion fabricated that document and produced it pursuant to subpoena when it was subpoenaed by the Bar Association. That violation alone from the Flowerbaugh case would merit suspension of her license for some period of time. When coupled with the other violations, the inability to monitor this attorney, we ask for an indefinite suspension. If the court determines that there are some conditions under which she can continue to practice, we would ask that you look at our November 1996 submission in writing of closing arguments, Exhibit A attached, as well as the board's opinion with the restrictions on her future practice. Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Luckville. Mr. Ballou, you saved about 9.5 minutes of your time.
Your Honor, you can see it is better controlling than giving the nature of my client's reputation generally. I cannot with certainty, however, say that monitoring can or cannot work. And one of the other issues, too, is if there is a medical problem that is involved, I would hope that, and I know that, we have at least progressed in the area where that ought to be something that we ought to follow through on to give a chance to see if it works or not. I think that when you look at all things, are present in these cases, all the facts, and it seems to me that Ms. Wright has at least a better career to this point in such a way where there's no reason to think that she cannot go ahead and practice in a way being acceptable by the court. And so far as monitoring is concerned, to identify a certain area, having done that, I think almost by implication, we're saying, not expressly saying, that she had practiced competently in these other areas. The elimination of one area alone, the monitoring of that area alone, I think would be a sufficient basis to think that we ought to be able to improve her practice and improve the expectations of the public. If there are no further questions, I'll submit.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.